And this is Studio 2 on Wednesday, October 30th. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarin.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We have 6 days left until the election, and the national spotlight has not let up on Pennsylvania. Polls show that former President Trump and Vice President Harris are in a dead heat. But the presidential contest is not the only one that is on the ballot. There are many important congressional races, state house races, an attorney general's race, and more.
So today we're going to dive into some of the more consequential and close down ballot races, including the Senate race between Senator Bob Casey and Dave McCormick. Also shortly, we're going to have Secretary of the Commonwealth Al Schmidt with us. He's in charge of ensuring that our elections run smoothly, that they're fair and secure. He also has to counter some of those election-related conspiracy theories and misinformation that is popping up everywhere. And of course, here in Philadelphia, Cherry,
yeah,
it is it's a frenetic time.
It is.
There are a lot of celebrities bouncing around.
I've seen it.
I feel like every day they spin a big old bingo wheel mm-hmm. full of celebrities, and 3 new ones pop out, and they just end up at an event somewhere in Philadelphia.
Yeah. I heard Kerry Washington was here.
Kerry Washington was here.
You mentioned Quavo earlier.
Do the people know about Quavo?
Rapper.
Yeah, there we go.
The list is very long. Robert De Niro was here.
Robert De Niro. Well, the thing about the Quavo event is that Quavo appeared at an event with Bill Nye, the science guy.
What a combo.
And KJ Martin and Reggie Jackson, who are reserve players on the Philadelphia 76ers. This was a dance party at Philadelphia City Hall. And every once in a while, it's important to step
Bill
back.
Bill Nye can dance, though. I feel like he could dance.
There's video, apparently.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. But it's sometimes it's good just to step back from all the madness and just appreciate the weirdness that goes on in Philadelphia during an election season. We are the largest market in the most important swing state. Never take it for granted, folks.
I know, that's right. And Spike Lee is going to be here at a rally. Yeah,
he is here right now.
So, like you said, Philadelphia. And one of the things that I loved about this election is we've been right here at WHYY, and things have just been happening around us, across the street at the National Constitution Center, right here in the lobby of WHYY. We had a conversation with Vice President Kamala Harris. So it's been, it's just been great being here in the center of the political universe.
A lot of energy, but also a lot of misinformation. We want to talk about that right now.
Yes, and disinformation, absolutely.
With Secretary of the Commonwealth Al Schmidt, who joins us on the line. Secretary Al Schmidt, thanks for joining us on Studio 2.
Oh, nothing to thank. I appreciate your attention to this matter.
Yes. And Secretary Schmidt, President Donald Trump posted on social media today that Pennsylvania is cheating and getting caught. I want to start our conversation by you responding to these types of, accusations, and also by telling voters about the protections that are in place in Pennsylvania to ensure that our election is safe and secure and fair.
Yes, I haven't seen the posts. I've certainly been familiar with the accusations over the years. Our county election officials, who are the people who really run the elections in Pennsylvania, are professional civil servants, and they do everything that is required of them under the law, so that when you register to vote, you're providing a social security number or driver's license number. They're checking identity before you're registered. When you show up to vote, you are providing ID the first time you vote. There are safeguards in that process. When you apply to vote by mail, you are providing a social security number or the last four of your social security number or your driver's license number. So there are safeguards built into the process every step along the way. When we do have cases like what has been reported for voter registration in Lancaster County, it's, I think, an important indication of how the system works, and that in any county, if voter registration applications are submitted that are apparently fraudulent or don't pass the identity checks, they are flagged and they are referred to their district attorney's office for further investigation and, if warranted, prosecution.
And that's what happened in Lancaster County. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you actually clarify for us what happened in Lancaster County? Because the former president wrote that the county was, quote, caught with 2,600 fake ballots and forms written by the same person. What do we know happened in Lancaster County, and what's the status of the investigation right now?
So we've been in contact with Lancaster County from the beginning to provide guidance to them. They shared with us that they had received some number of, again, these are voter registration applications. They're not votes. Mm-hmm. They're not ballots. They're not anything like that. That when they received those applications, they flagged them as being possibly not legitimate, as any county would do. So Lancaster County is doing the responsible thing, which is investigating those cases. And if those voter registration applications are not legitimate, they will not be processed. And that is the same in any of our counties at any time. Again, to clarify one thing, the county wasn't saying they had 25 or 2,600 problematic registrations. They said they received that number and that some number within that number were possibly not legitimate. So the county's investigating, and we look forward to hearing hearing the results of those investigations.
Yeah, I know we only have a few minutes with you, and one of the questions that we get a lot from our listeners and just from folks who are voters is dealing with mail-in ballots. I know much of that is the counting of those ballots are in the hands of the counties, but could you tell us how that process will work and maybe walk us through the timeline?
Yes, and that's really the big question is, you know, when will we know who won and who lost? Well, it has only ever been a matter of how close an election is. If an election is close, it takes longer. If it's not close at all, it doesn't take that long. Like, for example, in primary 2022, the race for governor of Pennsylvania was called by, I think, 10 or 11 at night. The race for U.S. Senate was called by 1 or 2 in the morning. When a race is called, that doesn't mean that our counties stop counting. Mm. They count every last vote cast by a registered eligible voter on or before Election Day. One thing that hasn't changed since 2020, unfortunately, is that our counties cannot begin the process of counting mail ballots until 7 a.m. in election morning, or processing the envelopes even, unlike any number of other states. But some things have changed. Counties have acquired new equipment to assist with that process. They have a lot more experience than they had in 2020, and fewer voters are voting by mail than they were during that peak COVID environment. So new equipment, more experience, and fewer votes to count. So hopefully we'll know who won and who lost earlier than we did in 2020.
Hopefully a faster process. Also wanted to alert our listeners to news that happened this morning. The Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court affirmed a lower court ruling in a case surrounding whether or not counties must count undated mail ballots. Have you been briefed on that ruling? And what can you tell us about undated mail ballots and whether or not they'll be counted, and in which counties?
Yeah, I saw that decision just a few moments ago, but I would caution listeners. There is, you know, you can never predict who is going to win or who's going to lose, and you can never predict what turnout is going to be like. But you can always predict there's plenty of lawsuits around election time, and this is an example of that. When voters complete their mail ballot, and voting by mail is very simple. All this back and forth makes it seem controversial or complicated or all the rest. It's really not. If voters follow the instructions in completing their ballot, in putting the ballot in the secrecy envelope, in putting the secrecy envelope in the outer envelope, signing it and putting that day's date, their vote will be counted. So that case really dealt with whether the voter had to write the current date on their ballot envelope when they completed it. But the instructions are simple. I would just encourage voters to sign and date their ballot envelope. It's not difficult.
And quick follow-up along that, we had the ruling that came out recently that now allows Pennsylvania voters who have made possible mistakes on their mail-in ballots to correct them by filing a provisional ballot. How is the state sort of educating voters about this? Because I know whether or not people actually get notified of mistakes is a county-by-county situation.
It is. And again, counties, elections really run at the county level in Pennsylvania. So many counties will notify a voter. So if the mail ballot comes back and they haven't signed it or they haven't dated it, they'll let the voter know that that ballot won't be counted, to give them either the opportunity to come in the office to then sign it or date the envelope, or to request a replacement ballot, or to show up on their polling place and vote by what's called a provisional ballot, which is a paper ballot that you can cast at your polling place. And that decision was that if a mail ballot was submitted that had a fatal defect, like it not being signed, like it not being dated, then if the voter showed up in person at the polling place on election day, then that vote would be counted. That provisional ballot would be counted. It's not a matter of two votes being cast or counted. Mm-hmm. It's still only one vote that's counted at the end of the day.
Before we let you go, we have seen instances across the country, just a few, but they're notable, of arson committed at ballot drop boxes. What would the state do in a case where a large batch of mail-in ballots was destroyed by a vandal? What is the contingency?
Yeah, we saw, I think there were two cases in the western United States mm-hmm. of that. I can't imagine how many total number of Board of Elections drop boxes there are total. So we're talking about two cases, even though every vote is precious. I'm not suggesting it's mm-hmm. not a serious matter. In Pennsylvania, there is camera surveillance on drop boxes. Most counties or many counties have them staffed when they're open and all the rest. Voting by mail is a safe and secure process. If you return your vote, your mail ballot to your drop box, and only the voter can return their own ballot in Pennsylvania, it will be counted, provided the simple instructions were followed.
Well, all right. Well, thank you so much, Secretary of the Commonwealth Al Schmidt, for being with us today on Studio 2.
No, nothing to thank.
And we know you're busy. We really do appreciate the time. So we are going to thank you, Al Schmidt.
Yes.
And best of luck as this week unfolds. Next, we're going to head down the ballot. Control of both congressional houses could run through Pennsylvania. We're going to talk about it with a pair of reporters. Stay tuned. You're listening to Studio 2.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
This is Studio 2. Welcome back. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. I took a look at my sample ballot this morning. You got Donald Trump. You got Kamala Harris.
Yep.
And then you have 30 names. Mm. Today, we're going to talk about the other names.
Down ballot races could reshape legislatures in Washington and in Harrisburg. So we're going to talk about a handful of those this hour, focusing on the ones that look like toss-ups. And here to guide us are a pair of guests. We have Mark Levy, who covers politics and state government in Pennsylvania for the Associated Press. Mark, welcome to Studio 2.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We also have Julia Taruso in studio. She covers politics for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Welcome to Studio 2, Julia.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
And our question for you, our lovely listener this hour: what down ballot races are the most interesting to you and why? Email studio2@whyy.org or give us a call. You know the number. It's 888-477-9499.
And so, Julia, we want to start with the Senate race. And I'm looking at you because a recent Inquirer poll showed that Dave McCormick, the Republican, has gained significant ground on incumbent Democratic Senator Bob Casey in recent months. I want to talk about what factors you think has allowed there to go from a 9-point lead for Casey to now within the margin of error.
Yeah, so that's a race where for months, as you said, Senator Casey looked like he had a sizable lead. But even he was saying he expected the race to tighten. And that's exactly what happened. I think it is a case of Pennsylvania being a state that is very, very close. It's a race in which, you know, Casey is he's a popular senator. His father was a former governor mm-hmm. of this state, but he's never really faced a real challenger who's run kind of the kind of campaign that Dave McCormick has. And McCormick's run a very well-funded campaign. He sort of had a test run in 2022 when he was running for the Republican nomination. And he's managed, McCormick has, you know, to kind of run alongside former President Trump, but also continue to hold on to some of those Nikki Haley more moderate voters. So I think that's a factor. And I think just how tight Pennsylvania is at the presidential level is a factor in terms of how Democrats are doing in the state.
Wonderful. Mark, did you want to weigh in on this race?
Well, Julia sort of gave a very good foundation for the race, but she's right that Bob Casey has said all along that this is his toughest challenge ever. He's never had someone who was this well-funded, somebody who had such a large outside influx of money.
And we're talking about billionaire money, millions and millions, yeah.
Right. A lot of it is from the world of finance. David McCormick comes from the world of finance. He was an executive at the world's largest hedge fund for 12 years. And the people who are contributing to a super PAC that was created explicitly to support him, the people who are largely contributing the vast majority of the money come from the finance world. And that's been another factor that's helped David McCormick stay up on TV for months at a time.
To wit, McCormick has spent, at least as of mid-October, according to our reporting here at WHYY, about $130 million. That's the spend.
Yes.
Casey, $110. And what's interesting when you break that down is that Casey's campaign has actually doubled McCormick in spending. It's the disparity in outside spending that really has created the situation that both of you talked about. Mark, I want to stick with you on Dave McCormick. You know, it's an interesting reflection of the 2022 race with Mehmet Oz and John Fetterman. Oz was painted as an outsider, mm-hmm. hadn't lived in Pennsylvania. McCormick has some of that same baggage, but maybe there's some evidence that it's not quite sticking to him. Give us a sense of McCormick, the non-Pennsylvanian, where that attack line comes from and how successful it's been.
So David McCormick was born in Pennsylvania, grew up in Pennsylvania, and left to go to the military academy at West Point for college, spent some time as an adult in Pittsburgh, then went to work for the administration of President George Bush, President George W. Bush. After that, living in Washington, D.C., he moved to Connecticut for 12 years, as I mentioned earlier, where he was working for Bridgewater Associates. Before he ran in 2022, he moved back to, well, he bought a house in Pittsburgh. The allegation now is that he has lived, in quotes, in Connecticut. And it's true, he has maintained a residence there, at least until earlier this summer, according to his campaign, because he had high school age daughters who were going to high school there. So he has maintained that he has been splitting his time in Pennsylvania, living out of his Pittsburgh house, but also taking time to spend with a daughter who is completing high school in Connecticut. So it's in a way, it's not clear that the label of carpetbagger hurt Mehmet Oz in 2022. Democrats were motivated primarily by abortion rights and primarily by protecting democracy after the attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. The people voting for John Fetterman weren't necessarily voting for him because they didn't like the fact that Mehmet Oz has, you know, quote unquote, moved from New Jersey. Oz barely moved, really. He was still filming social media videos in his mansion in New Jersey, which was just across the Hudson River mm-hmm. from New York City. So if the carpetbagger label is hurting David McCormick in this cycle, it's not crystal clear. These are perhaps people who would be voting for Casey anyway. Oz won the primary, the 2022 Republican primary, with the endorsement of Donald Trump at the time. But, you know, he wasn't the only one who had the carpetbagger label in that race. Carla Sands, who had just moved from California, and David McCormick, who, as I said, had just moved from Connecticut, all were being pasted with that label. And it's just not clear, really, the extent to which voters are going to vote for someone on the issues, regardless of where they're from. And it's not clear to me necessarily how much stock they put in someone's identity with the state that they live in.
Do you think voters care that, you know, he's being backed by billionaires? I know that's been one of the attacks that Casey has lodged against McCormick, but do you think that they care about that?
It's hard to say. I've had Republican campaign people scratch their heads and say that perhaps David McCormick is in trouble because of his connections to China, which is primarily a function of how his hedge fund was investing. The fact that he's rich or getting contributions from billionaires is definitely an attack line by the Casey campaign. In fact, if David McCormick is elected, he might be the wealthiest senator to join the Senate. But it is hard to tell in such a politically polarized atmosphere where it's very much us against them, Trump and Kamala Harris on the ballot. It's hard to tell whether those things are going to change minds or persuade swing voters.
Yeah, I think it's hard for those lines of attack to get the oxygen they got when in 2022 we were just focused on a Senate race.
Right.
You know, even minor gaffes like McCormick calling Yingling beer Yangling is an ad that's playing incessantly. But, you know,
when one of those, you see four Trump Harris ads, and it's like, I forgot about the Yangling
right.
one already.
It doesn't have the lasting power of Oz's crudité moment.
If you want to join the conversation, 888-477-9499, studio2 at WHYY.org. We haven't talked much about Bob Casey, Julia Taruso. Legacy name, like you said, his dad was governor. He held statewide office before he was a U.S. senator. I'm going over his results. 2006, he won 58-41. 2012, 53-44. 2018, 55-42. I want to circle back to 2012. He ran a couple points ahead of Obama there. I think Obama won Pennsylvania about 51%. Casey got 53%. Do you think there's evidence that Casey can outrun Harris here in Pennsylvania, regardless of what happens in that race?
I think it was certainly looking like it in some of those early polls. And I think in the way that Casey is running right now, you can see that his campaign thinks that there are Trump Casey voters out there. He has an ad out in which he's actually distancing himself from President Biden, which for Bob Casey is a big political step to take. These two have been longtime allies. They grew up on literally the same street in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So you see ads where he's distancing himself from Biden, where he's saying he's actually bucked Biden on a moratorium on new fracking sites. You know, these are explicit appeals to the kind of white working class voter who might know they're voting for Trump, but, you know, they're still registered a Democrat and they're trying to figure out what to do in the Senate race. So I think if there was a split ticket direction, I think polling shows slightly more of a chance that you'll see more Casey Trump voters, but again, than McCormick Harris voters. But again, it's so close. I don't want to eat those words if I'm wrong later.
It's a tough time of year to make predictions, for sure.
Yeah, Mark, I got to ask you, just following up with what Julia was talking about, there's been a lot of attacks by McCormick against Casey, trying to tie him to Biden on the border, dealing with crime. And for a lot of low information voters who haven't been paying attention, maybe their first times, they have real, because Casey has been fairly quiet. He's not a loud senator. Your thoughts on how those message points have been landing?
Again, it's hard to say whether this is going to influence swing voters or what they're going to make their decisions on. It's such an individual decision. But you're right that David McCormick has used the national Republican attack line, really. It's being used in just about every state, every Senate race, that Democrats have been weak on the border, that Biden's been weak on the border, that Harris has been weak on the border, and that Casey has supported that agenda. Casey's response to that is that, you know, the Senate drew up a bipartisan border bill that would have toughened the law and given the president much more authority to shut down the border, and would have funded many more border agents. It was endorsed by the border agents union, and it was drafted with the support of Republican leadership in the Senate, and looked like it might pass until Donald Trump came out against it. Now, Democrats say that Republicans just wanted to block the bill to keep alive what they think is a potent political issue for them during this election year. Republicans say that there's a House bill that passed the House that is a much tougher border bill that they support. And so that has played prominently into their two debates, this bill and the issue of the border. But certainly when you talk to Republicans, they have absorbed this discussion of the border, and it is motivating for them. When you talk to Democrats, it's not a motivating factor for them. As I mentioned earlier, protecting democracy, protecting the nation from Trump, protecting abortion rights tends to be very motivating for Democrats.
And as I mentioned earlier, want to join the conversation this hour. We're talking about down ballot races. Email us, studio2@whyy.org. What are you following this election cycle outside of the presidential? Also, give us a call, 888-477-9499. Here's an email from Tim who says, I'm following the race for the 7th congressional seat between Susan Wilde and Ryan McKenzie. So let's talk about it now, Julia Taruso. We're going up to the Lehigh Valley now. Wilde versus McKenzie. This is a very swingy district. Biden carried it by 0.6% in 2020. Set the stage for this race that could determine control of the U.S. House.
Yeah, the Lehigh Valley is absolutely a bellwether district, you know, within swing state Pennsylvania. It's also sort of been the ground zero for politics this week in Pennsylvania. The Harris campaign had some folks there yesterday. Trump had a rally in Allentown last night. But in terms of the 7th district race, Representative Wilde hung on to her seat, I think, by about 2 percentage points in 2022.
51-49.
Yeah, so that was one of the tighter races we saw in Pennsylvania, and it's looking just as tight this time. She's facing State Representative Ryan McKenzie. You know, this is an area, I think part of the reason it's such a bellwether is it is kind of representative of the country. You've got a blend of suburban, urban, ex-urban areas. You have demographics that have changed a lot over the last couple decades, home to one of the largest Latino populations in the state. And, you know, it could absolutely, how goes the 7th could be how goes the rest of the state.
Yeah. And could you dig into a little bit more, Mark, on these candidates? Because you have a lot of outside money, outside groups pumping money into this race. So could you tell us a little bit about where folks stand here?
Yeah. So the Susan Wilde race is one of the two most expensive races for Congress, for the U.S. House in Pennsylvania right now. The other very expensive race is just to the north of the Lehigh Valley, and that is Matt Cartwright's district in Scranton, which is a district that Trump actually won in 2020, and that makes Matt Cartwright one of just five Democrats running for re-election this year in a district that Trump won. Both districts, both the Wilde and Cartwright districts, have been perennial targets for Republicans because they are so closely politically divided. Democrats have a very, very slight registration edge in both districts. And, you know, those are also areas where you find people registered as Democrats, but who really have just begun voting Republican. It's similar to southwestern Pennsylvania in that regard. But yeah, I mean, I think both races now are clocking in at more than $20 million at the last time I checked. And most of that is from outside groups. Susan Wild has heavily outraised her opponent, Ryan McKenzie. But like I said, I think the last time I checked, one of the House Republican campaign committees had pumped $7 million into that race. That's just one campaign committee from outside.
Just an astounding amount of money.
A lot of money, yeah.
In that PA-8 race, Mark Levy, and this is the race in northeastern Pennsylvania, includes Scranton. You mentioned the incumbent, Matt Cartwright. His opponent, Rob Bresnahan Jr., I'll be honest, did a little Googling on him, didn't find a whole lot. Young guy, doesn't seem to have a long reputation in local politics. You know, the idea of trying to flip this district that already leans Republican depends somewhat on who the challenger is. Can you tell us much about Rob Bresnahan Jr., Mark Levy?
So I'll be honest, I haven't covered this race. I know a little bit about him from talking to his campaign, but he is, as you said, he's a young man. He's a first-time candidate. He is the son of a man who founded an electrical contracting firm. Rob took it over and expanded into a much more broader construction firm that also takes on development projects. So he does have a name up there. I don't know how active he's been in Republican politics, but the Republicans are very excited about him as a candidate, being that, you know, he has a name in the community. He's been there for some time, and that he's young, and he's, you know, all things considered, he's getting heavily outraised by Matt Cartwright, but Matt Cartwright is the incumbent, and Rob Bresnahan is doing what looks like a good job fundraising for a challenger.
Wow. I want to move on to Congressional District 10, the Scott Perry race. This is up in Dauphin County, parts of Cumberland and York counties. This area actually backed Shapiro in 2022. So I want to talk about this because Scott Perry, the Republican here, the incumbent, was able to win re-election by a significant margin, 8 points in 2022. This was after participation in January 6th. Julia, I want you to talk about this race and why Janelle Stelson, actually, people really believe that the Democratic challenger, has an opportunity here.
Yeah, this is looking like a tight race. And for many cycles, Democrats have been hoping to put up a formidable challenge to Representative Perry. You know, I think part of it is that Stelson is a former Republican. She's a former news anchor. She's known in the region. And her fundraising has been formidable. I think all of those things are making this a closer race. You know, you see that in the fact that Perry has debated her. You know, there are congressional races around the state where the incumbents are not debating. And I think the question remains, you know, if a big attack on Scott Perry is that, you know, he isn't just a Trump ally. He was one of his key allies in trying to overturn the election results here in 2020. He was investigated by the FBI. His cell phone was confiscated. And that has been a major theme of a lot of the attack ads against him. So it's interesting that, you know, may be effective this year when it wasn't in 2022, mm-hmm. when it was fresher in people's minds, or there might be something else at play that might not be what's happening. But I think when we look at, you know, what can we learn here more broadly, it's how effective is that line of attack given, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris is really trying to drive home the threats to democracy January 6th with Trump in these final days. So there's a little parallelism there in the themes that Democrats are trying to use.
And Cherry mentioned this, but it's a little bit opposite of the Cartwright district situation, in which this is a district, PA-10, where we've seen Democrats run well. Cherry mentioned that Shapiro won the district, but I'll also mention that Fetterman won this district in 2022. But Perry held on, and that was after January 6th. So I think there's this open question of how vulnerable really is he on this issue if he's already run on it, Julia?
Yeah, I think it may have more to do with the strength of the Democrat running,
right,
and kind of her being seen as, again, a more
that's
moderate.
More the change.
That's what I would guess is going on there. And you know, he's managed to survive time and time again. So I think there are some Republicans who are cautiously optimistic he will. But it's certainly looking like his toughest fight yet.
And quick follow-up to you, Mark. Janelle Stelson, I mean, Julia mentioned, former TV news anchor, but she has had some issues as well because she currently lives outside of the 10th District. Can you talk about her a little bit?
Right. So she doesn't live in the district. She lives in Lancaster County, which is next door, and has said that if she wins, she'll move to the district. But Scott Perry has made it clear to people where she actually lives. The other thing is that she was a Republican, apparently, for most of her life, and changed her registration to Democrat just before running. So those two things have come up. They came up in the primary. They came up in the general. But she did very well in a crowded primary. I'm trying to remember whether it was six or seven people and won. And she does have a strong name recognition. She's mm-hmm. been on TV for something like three decades in this area. The other thing is that this election is taking place in a very fast-growing part of Pennsylvania, and it's changing quickly. And it makes you wonder if all these voters moving in will have less and less allegiance over time to Scott Perry, regardless mm-hmm. of their party affiliation.
Mm, interesting. Before we go, just a couple minutes left, because Julia mentioned that there was a debate in PA 10. No debate in PA 1.
No.
Bucks County, where Brian Fitzpatrick.
No real race in PA 1.
Brian Fitzpatrick, the incumbent Republican, is running again against Ashley Ehaz. This seems, when you look at it demographically, electorally, it should be a place where Democrats are competitive. And yet Fitzpatrick is basically running as if this isn't a race at all.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case, Julia? Is this just not a race, even though it covers purple Bucks County?
Well, Fitzpatrick's being very smart to the frustration, I'm sure, of his opponent and to reporters who would like to interview him and cover a real race. But yeah, every single time he has run, you know, since Trump has been on the ballot, he has been able to avoid talking about if he's even going to vote for the former president. And he has managed to separate himself from Trump in a way that sells him with a lot of moderate voters. It's certainly looking, you know, the Democrats pulled some ad spending out of that race with just a week to go. So it's not looking like they're extremely hopeful. And he is facing the same challenger he did 2 years ago, which, you know, sometimes can be a good thing. They know the territory, but sometimes what didn't work 2 years ago doesn't work, you know, the next time around.
Yeah, we have about a minute left. I was wondering if we could wedge in here Congressional District 17, the race between Chris DeLuzio and Rob Mercury. Any thoughts on that? Mercury is out, you know, DeLuzio has outraised Mercury significantly. Your thoughts? Is there any competition here, Mark?
You know, independent polling is hard to come by, and sometimes the best assessment of a race is whether Republican Party and Democratic Party groups are funding it, and there is very, very, very little money trickling into this race and very few people talking about it outside the district. So it's a lot like the Fitzpatrick-Ehaz race where it just feels like it's over and that the incumbent will win, and the parties, whatever their internal polling shows them, is telling them not to spend money there because it'll be wasted.
Well, that's Mark Levy, who covers politics and state government in Pennsylvania for the Associated Press. Mark, thanks so much for your wisdom and your insights this hour on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And Julia Taruso, who covers politics for the Philadelphia Inquirer, thanks so much for coming in and sharing all that you know. I know you are oh so busy. So even getting 20, 25 minutes of your time is a blessing. Thanks, Julia.
Oh, good. Thank you both.
Yes. And coming up, we'll take a look at some critical statewide and local races, including the battle for control of the Pennsylvania State House. Stay tuned. We have lots to come. This is Studio 2.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
This is Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarin.
I'm Cherry Gregg. I like that elections voice, Avi.
I'm working on it.
Yes. And now we are turning to important state races that could determine which party takes control of the state legislature and the attorney general's race as well, which for some has been a political stepping stone to higher office.
Stephen Caruso is the Capitol reporter for Spotlight PA, and he is tracking all of the statewide elections somehow. I don't know how. Mm-hmm. And he joins us now in studio to highlight some of these key races. Stephen, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
So, Stephen, we wanted to start with the race for attorney general. Mm-hmm. The two challengers here seem to be, even though there's multiple people in the race, we have Eugene DePasquale versus Dave Sunday. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this race and who has the advantage.
So, you know, to start, attorney general, it's a very important position. It's jokingly sometimes referred to as aspiring governor.
Yes.
So Eugene Pasquale is a name that folks might already know. He was the state's auditor general, another mm-hmm. one of these statewide offices. Dave Sunday was the top prosecutor for York County, a mid-sized county in central Pennsylvania. I think the main thing to say is that, you know, this is a really important race. It's attracting a lot of national money because as the attorney general, you know, you have a lot of say over abortion law, election law, consumer protection, criminal justice, pardons. There's a lot of weighty positions that come with it. I can't say exactly who has an edge, but what I can say is, look, Sunday's running hard on his record. Mm-hmm. He's been a prosecutor. He's done the job. DePasquale has been in statewide office. And, you know, at Auditor General, you have a say in terms of running one of these row offices. Mm-hmm. You know, he's directed investigations, but he has a law degree. You have to have a law degree to be attorney general, but he hasn't used it in a courtroom. And Sunday's argument has basically been, you know, I'm the person who has done this job. I have prosecuted criminals. DePasquale hasn't. DePasquale's then leaned into, I mentioned some of these issues, you know, elections, abortion. Yeah. He's been saying, like, if you're a Democrat, like, you should be voting for me because, like, I'm the one who will safeguard abortion rights. I'm the one who will make sure your vote will count. I'm the one to trust if you have Democratic values.
And Ruben agrees mm-hmm. about the importance of this position. We got an email. Mm-hmm. PA Attorney General race, very important consideration. Whoever wins will manage lawsuits contesting those 2024 election
powerful,
results.
Yeah.
This is a powerful office with much independence. So DePasquale, the Democrat, Sunday, the Republican. What's interesting about this race, Stephen, neither is the incumbent, right? Mm-hmm. People might remember the past attorney general, the last elected one at least. He's the governor now.
What's his name?
Josh Shapiro,
oh,
I
yes.
believe. I think I saw him on The Daily Show the other night, and I said, who is that guy?
That's right, yeah.
So, Stephen, who has the edge in terms of sort of like institutional money support here? Because I'm seeing a lot of ads for this race, and
yeah.
it's kind of surprised me how many I've seen.
Man, I haven't gotten one yet. I don't know what that says about what they think of my
You're not
consumption
watching
habits.
Enough TV.
Apparently. Look, Dave Sunday has gotten most of the support. He's gotten about, we're still working our way through reports, but about $9 million in support from Jeff Yass, a PAC he's backed. It's not directly from him, but
yeah.
one of his PACs. And Eugene DePasquale has gotten some support, but not that much. That's in the form of ads, campaign contributions, all of that to Sunday. So that could be a big deal. Pennsylvanians, in my experience, voters, they love splitting their ticket. I think there's nothing they love more than going into the voting booth and saying, I'm going to vote for a Democrat, a Republican, and a Republican, a Democrat. But So I think it's hard to like call who's going to win these down ballot races for that reason. But that's a lot of money. And in a race that's a little more low information, even though, like, you know, I would argue that that's not commentary on what the attorney general does. It's just people only have so much, you know, space in their brains for politics. You know, that $9 million in ads could be an advantage.
Definite difference maker. I want to talk about the Pennsylvania state house races. Democrats right now have a one seat majority in the House. And, you know, they've had to lean on moderate Republicans to get anything passed. So I want you to walk us through some of the top races that you're paying attention to.
I mean, that could take a while. No. It's a 203-member chamber. So,
no, but I'm sure there's like four or five that you're focused
on. No, do all 203.
Well,
by memory.
No. So look, the Philly burbs have always been a place where, like, Democrats have a majority right now, a one-vote majority, because they broke through in the Philadelphia suburbs after redistricting. Some of the top races are still here. You know, a couple that come to mind are the 144th District. This is roughly Warminster in Bucks County. Incumbent Brian Monroe, a former cop, is running for re-election. He faces Dan McPhillips, who's the Bucks County coroner. And that's a race that attracted a lot of money, a lot of mudslinging. There's been a back and forth over Monroe's run. He's also a Navy veteran. His record, that race is one that's closely to watch. And Monroe only won by a handful of votes back in 2022. You know, down in Delaware and Chester County, you have the 160th District. This is incumbent Republican Craig Williams, a former prosecutor and attorney. He's running for re-election against Elizabeth Morrow, the Democrat. And that race, same thing. Mudsling kind of there, just in the terms of a lot of ads attacking his record on abortion. You know, I think, you know, there's varying levels of accuracy to those claims that I'm happy to run down if y'all want. But and even in within Philadelphia, you have Northeast Philadelphia's two very interesting races for Senate and State House. One of them has Jimmy Dillon against Picozzi, the Republican. And, you know, and then, and I should go back to the suburbs of Outer Chester County, the 13th District, John Lawrence, a longtime Republican incumbent in a redrawn district that includes like Oxford and areas like that against Christian Luna. So, like, you know, there's even more than that. But like, I would just say a lot of money and a lot of attention are still on the Philly burbs because there's a lot of votes to get there. And a lot of them are increasingly Democratic.
And I will add Christian Luna, the Democratic challenger out there in Chester County, 27 years old.
Yes.
That'll make you feel good about what you've accomplished so far in life. but you mentioned Northeast Philly. You mentioned the Senate race. But there's an interesting state house race there as well. This is Sean Dougherty versus Azaz Gill. This seat used to be held by Kevin Boyle, who lost in the primary to Sean Dougherty, who is related to another political dynasty here in Philadelphia. Any chances there for Republicans? I mean, Dougherty's a big name here in Philadelphia.
You know, I am not from Northeast Philadelphia, so I want to be very careful about my words. I know from meeting friends there, I know it's a parochial place, with all due respect to Northeast Philadelphia listeners. But, you know, look, I think what the main thing I could say is a lot of money has gotten to that race late from Democrats in TV ads. That's ads I have seen where Dougherty's saying that, you know, he's against Larry Krasner. He's wants to be tough on crime. That's the sort of thing I expect to see from Democratic candidates, particularly down ballot candidates, when you're a little scared. Now, a little scared doesn't mean you're going to lose. It just means maybe you saw something in a poll of 60,000 people that you don't like. And that's the other thing I should say. These districts are so, so small. Like, big issues like trickle down to them, like abortion and elections. But sometimes random small issues can become the difference between a win and a loss. Up in the Lehigh Valley, for instance, there's a race that's really hung on warehouse development in the region. So, like, it's interesting what happens. But going back to the Dougherty-Gill race, you know, Democrats are putting money in there. I know Republicans have been bullish on Northeast Philadelphia because of some trends recently. If that's enough to flip it, I don't know. But I know Dems are watching carefully.
Yeah, I want to touch on a couple more races. The Joe Hogan race, which is a little bit outside of our area. Joe Hogan, Republican, being challenged by Anna Payne. Why does this race seem interesting to you?
Well, that race is interesting, too, because it goes back to, you know, Hogan's a Republican incumbent. So kind of like Williams, what's interesting is seeing Republicans' records be kind of put under a microscope. I mean, pretty much every incumbent's record. This is, as a legislative reporter, you always love when you see votes you followed on the floor that were quite boring get turned into attack ads. It's fascinating to watch. But, you know, Hogan, too, has voted with Democrats on most of their priorities. You mentioned that earlier in the show, this idea that, like, Republican votes have helped pass Democratic agenda items.
Yeah.
Hogan is one of them. I mean, he voted for universal background checks. He voted for you know, I'll have to stop there so I don't say anything wrong. But simply, he's voted for Democratic priorities. Mm-hmm. And but then, you know, come election time, you have to start trying to hit him. So they tried to hit him on abortion. I saw that ad. I could tell you that I wasn't able to find an abortion bill that he voted for. But, you know, and even then, the wording tried to make it some of the effect of like, oh, well, he has allies who are anti-abortion. Mm-hmm. But this is the stuff you end up doing, because the fact is, you know, the chamber is closely divided, and if you have a majority, you say what runs and what doesn't, and that's really what's at stake here.
Yeah. And folks, I got to point out, he's doing this without notes. I have no idea how, but he's doing this without notes.
Top of the dome.
Top of the dome. 1 minute left here, but let's set the stakes. If Republicans do flip the chamber, how does that affect Governor Shapiro's agenda and what gets done in Harrisburg?
You know, it makes it a lot harder for Shapiro, or you could I would say it probably makes it harder for Shapiro. Right now, he has Democratic allies, you know, in the House, which mean that theoretically he has more leverage in budget talks. I mean, I look at what he did in 2023 and 2024, getting more money for education. About I think we're at probably $1 billion+ new dollars for education. That's something that I don't think gets done with just Republicans unless he's willing to, say, sign a voucher bill without relitigating that entire thing. But, you know, if it flips, in some ways, you know, it gets harder. You won't have as much leverage. But the other thing you could argue is that Republicans control both chambers, and it's kind of easier to make a deal with just Republicans than trying to get everyone, Republicans, Democrats, and his own ambitions all at the table and agree to something.
Wow. Can I just say you are so good. Caruso. Oh, my goodness.
We had Caruso and Taruso, and they were both great.
I know. Wonderful.
We need rhyming last names. That's the key.
Yes, and we're getting ready to wrap up. But if you could jam in here, how do you think the very top, the presidential race, will impact these down-ballot state races?
I think a lot of Pennsylvanians are very comfortable voting for a Democrat or Republican for president and then going to their local lawmaker and voting another way. If you want to go another state house race out in Johnstown, Cambria County, this is a district that votes like 70-30 for Trump, and there's still a Democrat who's been winning out there with Trump on the top of the ticket. His name is Frank Burns. He does it because people vote for him and not for the party.
All right. Well, we vote for you coming back on the program,
for
Stephen
Caruso.
Sure.
So
Capital
good.
Reporter for Spotlight PA. Thanks for the time, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Charlie Kyer engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much to everyone who emailed, wrote in, and thank you for joining us.